This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hello and welcome to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. We all know that a lot of our health is predetermined by our genes, right? We know that we can generally improve our health if we eat right, exercise, and manage our stress. But how to do those things, of course, is a matter of great debate. A lot of well-meaning health programs are focused solely on weight loss or heart health. But what if there was a second set of genes that could influence our weight, our mood, our long-term well-being? What if we could influence these genes by very specific and often surprising lifestyle choices? Well, the good news is that this second set of genes actually exists. It belongs to the bacteria that inhabit our gut, and it is vital in countless ways to our overall well-being. The details of how the microbial community, which is known as the microbiota, is hardwired into our health and disease are starting to come to light, and they are reshaping what it means to be human. Scientists are trying to unravel the causes behind all sorts of predominantly Western afflictions like cancer and diabetes, allergies, asthma, autism, and inflammatory bowel disease, and it's becoming clear that the microbiota plays an important role in the development of each of those conditions and in a lot of other aspects of our everyday life. We'll start talking about the good gut right after this.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this from the MrDad.com radio network.
All right, class, let's hear what everyone did this weekend. Jill?
Well, I raised my older sister to a big oak tree. It was at least 100 years old. My mom said I must have set a record or something. And then we went down by a stream and perched up on this huge rock and saw all of these little minnows swimming around way below us. And then I rescued my little brother from an evil slug king who was guarding him at the bush fortress. And my sister and I brought him back to our super twig fort for safety. And then we all laid out and told stories until it got dark. And the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Wow. Awesome.
Where were you, Jill?
Yeah.
We went to the forest. It's not that far away. Anyone want to come this weekend?
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week and find the fun, adventurous you. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Now, get ready for more positive parenting with Armin Brott from the MrDad.com radio network.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. My guest for this part of today's show is Justin Sonnenberg, who's the co-author with Erica Sonnenberg of The Good Gut, Taking Control of Your Weight, Your Mood, and Your Long-Term Health. Justin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Let's talk about, just generally speaking, first of all, how do you pronounce the word? Is it microbiota?
Microbiota.
Biota. Okay.
People pronounce it, yeah.
Okay. And what is that exactly?
Yeah, so the microbiota in general is just the collection of microbes that's associated with the human body. We are teeming with microbial life, and most of it actually resides within our gastrointestinal tract, and that's the gut microbiota. There are over 100 trillion cells there, so more cells in our intestine than human cells that make up our body. So actually by cell number, we're more microbial than we are human.
Yeah. Now, so I want you to explain this. It took a little while for me to get this. I had to read the sections over and over again, and I was actually looking into some other gut stuff. But in some ways, some of the microbiota is a protective layer that keeps undigested food and all sorts of other, almost literally, crap from getting out of your intestines into your bloodstream, right?
Well,
plays that role somewhat.
To some degree, yeah. So it helps us digest food, certainly. There's actually a mucus lining that we actually secrete in our intestine, and that lines the gut and plays the major protective role. The gut microbes are more in the center or lumen of the gastrointestinal tract. They take up the center of it, and that they play many vital roles there. Digesting food is one of them, and I think that's really been the amazing thing with this field is that for quite a while, we've known that these microbes are important in intestinal health and protecting us from pathogens that may pass through our gut. But what we're realizing is that these microbes in our gut are actually a control center for human biology. They connect to our metabolism, our immune system, and even our central nervous system. So there's really many signals emanating from this gut microbial community that's so vital for health.
And so one of the biggest problems is you take antibiotics and you wipe the whole thing out. And there are, and you need to talk about this too a little bit, that there's good stuff and there's bad stuff. And when you wipe everything out, you're upsetting the balance between good and bad. And sometimes the bad ones were being in check by the good ones. And now that's not happening. And so you end up with C. difficile. Is that how you pronounce it?
Exactly.
And some other conditions. And you got to talk about that.
Yeah, exactly. You're exactly right. So we have this microbial community. And you can think about it a bit like a rainforest. It's an ecosystem with many different species that are interacting. There are viruses there that are attacking some of the bacteria. So there's predator-prey interaction. So it's this really complex, dynamic system. And when you hit it with antibiotics, you wipe out the community, and there may be some bad actors in there that are normally held in check by all of the good members. But when you wipe out all of the good members with antibiotics, some of these bad guys like Clostridium difficile can take over and cause really profound colitis. And so, you know, I think for many years, people didn't really see a downside from taking antibiotics. It was just kind of viewed as something you do if you have, you know, an ear infection or a respiratory infection, and very few side effects. But what we're realizing now is every time you take a course of antibiotics, not only do you make yourself susceptible to these bad bacterial pathogens that can crop up, but you also really take out this community that's performing so many vital functions and communicating with us in so many mm-hmm. ways, and that's a big problem.
Well, you talk about, I think, I can't remember the exact statistics, you'll have to straighten me out on this, but I think it was something like 70% of people who are in nursing homes have that C. difficile stuff in them. They're not suffering from it. It's managed, but that's why there is such a huge amount of that going on in nursing homes, is because they take antibiotics. They're in there for something else. They get sick. And so that was it right about 70%?
Yeah,
like
that's about right. It's certainly over half. And they harbor this pathogen. And again, it doesn't cause disease in most individuals. But as soon as you take antibiotics, it has this window of opportunity where it can take over and wreak havoc on your gastrointestinal tract.
So, all right, we'll skip around a little bit because this is the one thing I'm kind of looking for in the book and everything else is, you know, we hear about probiotics. You go to Costco or you go anywhere, you know, Whole Foods, and you hear about probiotics. You can get probiotic milk. You can get probiotic just drinks. I was at Costco the other day, just like these big things of juice that are probiotic. What does that mean? And how much of it do we need?
Yeah, so, you know, probiotics are interesting. So it's formally defined, a probiotic, as a live microbe that you consume. And if you take it in adequate amounts, it'll confer a health benefit on you. But most commercial products don't actually meet that formal definition. It doesn't mean that they don't do good things, but it means that they haven't been studied in great detail. And there are certainly some products out there that are not quality products, and that's because the supplement industry is not regulated very closely. And so you have to be very careful when something's labeled probiotic. But these probiotic organisms are different than the resident microbes. They actually pass through the digestive tract. They don't take up residence. They're transient members of this community, but they still can have a positive impact. They can help us fight off respiratory infections. It looks like they interact with the immune system. The mechanisms are not really well understood, but we really recommend that people try to get probiotic type organisms every day, and we really like trying to get them through fermented foods. So things like yogurt and kefir and kimchi and sauerkraut are teeming with live microbes that play a vital role transiting through the system and helping regulate everything.
How do they stay alive? I mean, that's the thing I wonder about this. I mean, so they're in the refrigerator, they're kept alive, but you can also take them in capsule form. So, I mean, I can't imagine that they're just, I mean, unless they're like sea monkeys or something where, right. You know, they just stay around in powder form forever.
Yeah, so they don't stay around forever. They'll stay around usually for a while in powder form if you dry freeze them. And that's how a lot of the supplement manufacturers prepare them. But certainly they do better if they're refrigerated and in something like yogurt and kefir. But over time, they will die off. And so you need to be very careful that whatever you're buying has a use-by date and, even better, a number of live organisms that they guarantee by a certain date.
You talk about in the book how there's somewhere around 1,000 different species that are going on there. Yours, I'm imagining, tell me if I'm wrong, that yours are going to be different than mine, what I need and what you need. You know, my taking probiotics, the same package that you would, or the same couple of teaspoonfuls of kimchi or sauerkraut, do we both need the same thing?
Yeah, very good question. And this is one of the really both hot topics and difficult things to study about the microbiota is, and you're exactly right, everybody's microbiota is slightly different than the next person. However, when you look at the gut microbiota, there are general attributes or functions and members that are common between individuals. And so we can learn about the microbiota and make some generalizations, but it does mean that, for instance, a probiotic that works well for me may not necessarily work well for you. And in the book, we talk about ways people can go through trial and error trying to isolate the right products that work well for their system.
So what's happened over years or over centuries? Our microbiota has changed, right? I mean, we used to have a lot more, and you talk about some primitive tribes out in the bush that have more and different ones than we do. And so you know, we seem generally to be a relatively healthy species.
Well, yeah, I agree. We certainly have done a lot to rid ourselves of infectious disease, extend our lifespan. One thing that's really alarming in the Western world is this increase in Western diseases, things like cancer, heart disease. Some of these are certainly unmasked by our longer lifespan, but there are things like allergies, asthma, childhood Crohn's disease that simply aren't present in these traditional societies. And you're right, they have much more diverse microbiotas. They haven't been exposed to as many antibiotics. They eat fiber-rich diets, and it turns out that dietary fiber is what fuels this community. Many of these hunter-gatherers eat on the order of 10 times as much dietary fiber as Westerners do, up around 100 grams per day.
Wow.
And so we're actually starving our microbial community by eating processed foods and foods low in fiber. And we think this is meaningful both for the deterioration of this community and also for a long-term negative impact on our health.
Talking with Justin Sonnenberg, who's the co-author with Erica Sonnenberg of The Good Gut, Taking Control of Your Weight, Your Mood, and Your Long-Term Health. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll keep talking to Justin about a lot of other good stuff.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs.
I start to cough.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Today, one out of 13 children suffer from some form of asthma, accounting for nearly one-third of all emergency room visits.
I feel like I'm choking.
It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
A little whistle sound comes out when I breathe.
But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Log on to www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
In 1977, in Johannesburg, South Africa, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the US and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the US Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1
in 110. Ernie Els encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Braun. If you're just joining us, talking with Justin Sonnenberg, who's the co-author with Erica Sonnenberg of The Good Gut, Taking Control of Your Weight, Your Mood, and Your Long-Term Health. Talk a little bit about C-sections and how this affects. I just finished a major revision on a book of mine on pregnancy and childbirth. It's mostly aimed at dads. And talked about this a little bit without having actually, before I had read your book, that there seems to be an influence or an increase in certain types of baby conditions and later on adult conditions among people who were born by C-section as opposed to those who got squeezed through and were exposed to, I guess, their mother's bacteria. Talk about that. I think it's just really fascinating. And you talk about your kids were born by C-section. You're kind of wondering about whether some of their issues are related to that.
Absolutely. We were hoping for a natural childbirth and ended up after 24 hours of labor with our first daughter in an emergency C-section. And she actually went on to be on IV antibiotics for the first 48 hours of her life, an absolute nightmare scenario for somebody that studies the gut microbiota. But sometimes you can't avoid these situations. But yeah, this question of C-sections is really interesting. So we're sterile for the most part in the womb. When we're born into this world, our gut is colonized rapidly by the first microbes that we encounter. And then over the first year, there's this complex assembly process of the gut microbiota. And what we know is that a baby born by C-section, over the first few days of life, the gut microbiota looks like a skin microbiota rather than a vaginal and gut microbiota as a baby that's born through the birth canal. So really, the microbes that colonize the gut during those first few days are very different in C-section babies and babies born vaginally. And this may provide a really nice hint as to why these babies go on and have different probabilities of getting things like having things like allergies and asthma.
So I want to go back to mucus on the inside of the intestines. So you talk about how some of the microbiota, the changes that are going on in there, and some of the food that you're eating, and sugar in particular was one we were talking about on the elevator on the way up here, kind of breaks down that mucus and allows, again, the stuff to get out that shouldn't be out.
That's exactly right. So the mucus plays a really important barrier role. And what's interesting about the mucus is that it's also a rich source of carbohydrates. And so the bacteria that live in the gut actually prefer, by and large, to eat dietary fiber, the type of plant material that you might consume in a salad or with broccoli, whole grains, legumes, things like that. But if you're not eating that type of food, your gut microbiota switches over and it starts eating you. It starts eating your mucus because that's the only carbohydrate that's available. And over time, this has the possibility of thinning that mucus and breaking down that important immunological barrier. So not a very good scene.
So what can we do as average people who are not going to go and spend every cent we have on probiotic stuff at Whole Foods? You know, what do we need to do for our diet to keep ourselves healthy and then to possibly ward off some of the problems that we're experiencing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think as an adult, there are some concrete steps. One other thing that I want to say about child rearing, the other really important part of nurturing a healthy microbiota is breastfeeding. It turns out that the third most abundant compound in breast milk is a class of compounds called human milk oligosaccharides, these complex carbohydrates. And they're third, as you know, really abundant, right behind fat and lactose, two things that we've all heard about. But it turns out the baby can't digest these complex carbohydrates. And so the question was, why would a mother go to such great effort to put these into her breast milk? Well, it turns out the mother is providing dietary fiber to her baby's gut microbes. These are complex carbohydrates that the mother puts into her breast milk to help assemble a healthy microbiota early in life for the fitness of our species.
The mother is not putting them in there. That's happening
exactly.
By itself.
I mean, that's the forces of evolution.
So I didn't want to put pressure on mothers to go off and buy stuff to put into their milk.
Absolutely not. These naturally occur, and so breastfeed, but they can't mimic the structures of these in infant formula. So infant formula is deficient in this class of compounds that's so important for the gut microbiota.
Now, you talked about the difference between the transient probiotics and the kinds that have taken up residence and are there in our gut. So how does that work exactly? I mean, how are we getting the stuff that's living there? How does that come into
us? It all comes in orally. It comes in through our mouth, and a lot of it comes in as we're born, but then over the course of the first year, things we're exposed to, we end up acquiring new microbes that end up taking up residence. And so we gradually acquire this diversity. But a major problem in our Western world right now is that we're so hygienic, and it's been great for limiting infectious disease, but it's really limited our exposure to important environmental microbes that could take up residence in our gut. And so one of the pieces of advice that I love to give to parents is stop being so crazy clean and worried about cleanliness and sanitizing everything. Let your kids go out in nature, let them garden, let them play in the yard and pet a dog and get a little bit dirty. You want to be careful. We still have our kids wash their hands during cold and flu season. If we come off a subway or a public grocery store, we still are clean. So you have to be smart about it. But it's certainly important to come into contact with more microbes, because these are what determine the diversity in your gut microbiome.
We probably all know. I mean, anybody who's had a kid who's gone through daycare, for example, you sort of know, and people laugh about it. Well, the daycare kids come home with every conceivable disease, but they end up with a stronger immune system than the kids who are cared for just at home with one person, for exactly that reason. They're not eating dirt, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So eating dirt is a good thing. And I think a lot of people think about it in the context of getting other little infections, colds that you may get through being in daycare. But there's this other process that's occurring simultaneously. As you're getting exposed to those viruses, you're also getting exposed to beneficial microbes that can increase the diversity in your microbiota.
So this is kind of been on the warpath about this for a long time, so people have heard me say it before, but so you stop with the antibacterial soaps unless you have some really bad thing like you're talking about getting off a subway or whatever.
Exactly right. Yeah, we have no antibacterial soaps in our household, and we have a dog that we, pet before meals without washing our hands just to make sure that we have enough microbes.
Oh, so that right there is going to make my mother scream.
Right.
Wash your hands after the dog.
Yeah, right. Okay. It's so ingrained. And there's so many parts that we learn about parenting that it's now counterintuitive to think that we have to take, the opposite steps to nurture a healthy microbiota. But there's this new awareness of this really important microbial community that lives within us that we have to start thinking about and nurturing.
Is there anything, one step that we can take? Talked about fermented foods, but just a general path you can set us on towards the right direction.
Yeah, without a doubt, the all the research in the field is just screaming that diet is the most important thing when it comes to the gut microbiota and dietary fiber. And this is really difficult to get kids to eat, especially kids to eat a lot of dietary fiber, because this is, beans and vegetables. But we really look at it in our household almost like putting on a seatbelt or going to bed at a reasonable hour. It's just part of raising a healthy child, and you have to really push your child. You can also educate them and say you have this pet inside of you that you're taking care of. You have to feed your gut microbes, and if you don't eat that broccoli, you're not going to be feeding your pet, and it's going to starve.
Well, for those of us who like to think in terms of grams and servings and stuff like that, how much do kids need roughly, and then how much should adults be getting?
Yeah, so for kids, I think the recommendation is somewhere around 20 grams of fiber per day, and then it goes up based on caloric intake. So adults, it's typically between 28 and 38 to 40, depending upon how many calories you take in.
But it sounds like that's way low. I mean, you're talking about the guys who are taking 100 a day.
It is, and it speaks to still our ignorance about what the optimal amount of fiber is. But most Americans right now, on average, are getting 15 grams of fiber per day. And so if you go to the Harvard School of Public Health, the Mayo website, all of these places are saying Americans need to eat more fiber. That's very clear. We don't know how much is too much, but you can probably max the possible amount that you can get in the Western world, get up around, you know, 50, 100 grams per day, and you'd be fine.
Well, you're going to start having some stomach problems if you have too much, right?
You certainly have to ramp slowly, but if you look at these traditional hunter-gatherer populations that have to live on roughage, on plant material primarily, they consume 100 to 150 grams of dietary fiber per day and don't experience bloating or diarrhea or any problems like that. They have larger stools. They pass more stools. This was noted in the 1970s by a famous surgeon called Dennis Burkett. He said, "America is a constipated nation. If you pass small stools, you have to have large hospitals."
Great. All right. Justin Sonnenberg, co-author with Erica Sonnenberg of The Good Gut, taking control of your weight, your mood, and your long-term health. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much.
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom.
I go to school with your children.
We say the Pledge of Allegiance together.
You see me around the neighborhood, and you tell me that I'm a pretty good kid.
Well, I'm one out of every five children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger.
This problem is closer than you think. My teacher tells me we can grow up to be whatever we want.
I want to grow up to be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry.
There's enough food in this country to feed everybody.
Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help.
Every dollar you donate helps provide 8 meals for kids like me, quietly struggling with hunger.
Together, we are Feeding America, brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey there, welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott, and let's talk toys a little bit here. Summer is pretty much underway, and we're seeing a lot more toys coming in that are designed to be used outside or that are supposed to replicate some aspect of the great outdoors. This week, I want to take a look at a few that fit into one category or the other, all from one of our favorite manufacturers, Playmobil. Let's start with the Summer Fun Ferris Wheel with lights. There's nothing like waiting in a line for an amusement park ride to remind you that this is summer. With this large set, your kids can have the joy, okay, the misery, of standing in lines, but without having to lather up with sunscreen or put on a hat. It comes with 7 two-seater gondolas, a functioning Ferris wheel, a ticket office, flashing lights, and quite a few other accessories. It also comes with 2 adult figures and 2 child figures, so your little one can make someone else feel the sting of waiting in line, and then when you finally get to the front, being told that you're too short to ride. Once all the seats are full, turn the crank and you're off. The Summer Fun Ferris Wheel with lights costs $79.99 at Playmobil.com. City Action Rescue Boat. The Coast Guard has a bit of an identity crisis. It started off as part of the Department of Treasury and then got transferred over to the Department of Transportation, and now it's under the Department of Homeland Security. They're also considered a branch of the military. But whoever they are, they do a great job of protecting our coasts and waterways. With the City Action Rescue Boat, your child can give the Coast Guard the respect they deserve, honoring them as they rescue drowning swimmers and battle pirates and take on other rescue operations. They can even put out fires or squirt the cat with the included plunger. This set includes the boat itself, 3 figures, hoses, a rescue ring, and more. And it costs $52.95, and it's for ages 4 to 10. City Action Coast Guard Station with Lighthouse. These Coast Guard heroes need to go somewhere at the end of a long, danger-filled day, right? And nothing could be better than their own station, complete with a functioning lighthouse and an observation room where the duty officers can keep a close eye on the coast and dispatch rescue crews as needed. The set comes with everything you and the kids could need to create amazing adventures together. It's got a boat, 5 Playmobil figures, who love to wait in line for the Ferris wheel on their day off, rescue rings, a full set of scuba gear, loads of medical and safety equipment, a cable winch to haul boats out of the water. It costs $79.95, and it's aimed at kids 4 to 10. Then there's the Sports and Action Speed Glider. At some point, pretending to be outdoors needs to give way to the real thing. And this sleek glider is the perfect way to encourage kids, and you too, to stretch those legs. Just assemble it, which will take about a minute, and you're ready for a really fun game of catch or a long-distance throwing competition. As long as the pilot is in his seat, and that's the pilot that comes with it, he really needs to be there to balance the aircraft, the glider is very easy to throw, even for young kids. And with working LED lights, there's no reason for the fun to stop when the sun goes down. Just keep right on going because you can see it in the dark. It's $26.99, and it's aimed at ages 6 to 14. You can get a lot more toy reviews and game reviews and all sorts of other reviews at parentsatplay.com. That's our website. You can drop us a line through there as well, parentsatplay.com. We'll be back next week with another Parents at Play segment or an Ask Mr. Dad segment, depending on which week it is. Until then, I'm Armin Broad.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.